To some, a baby's babbling doesn't mean much, but it does. Especially if there's no babbling at all. Little to no babbling by 12 months or later is just one of the possible signs of autism in children. Learn more at autismspeaks.org. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
This is your tech news briefing for Thursday, August 20th. I'm Amanda Llewellyn for The Wall Street Journal. The lines between work and home are blurring. That also goes for our workplace communication tools like Slack and Microsoft Teams. While the services have helped us stay connected with our colleagues, it can sometimes be hard to read the chat room, if you will. And on occasion, exchanges on these sorts of services can even get out of hand. Our reporter Chip Cutter will tell us all about it after these headlines. Apple's market valuation briefly crossed $2 trillion in trading yesterday, making Apple the first U.S. public company to reach the milestone, just 2 years after crossing the $1 trillion mark. Here's our columnist Dan Gallagher with some more context.
You know, so in 2 years, its market value has gone from $1 trillion to $2 trillion. What I found looking at the data is that also in 2 years, the price-to-earnings ratio, which represents a stock price relative to what projected earnings are, has also more than doubled. You know, what that interprets is investors are now essentially paying double for the same relative earnings power that they were 2 years ago. Apple really hasn't traded at this kind of valuation, price-to-earnings, since 2008. And that's when the iPhone was still very new. The App Store just launched. It was a very, very different company then. So as a mature, large company, it's always had a much lower valuation, and that makes it, I think, more sensitive. And then you add in the fact that the App Store is under attack, from both politicians, lawmakers, other companies. You've got hype about this next iPhone coming up. So all these things are, I think, add a lot of risk at $2 trillion that kind of weren't there when it was at $1 trillion, even though, you know, both are just, you know, very big numbers, obviously.
Airbnb said yesterday that it's filed paperwork for an initial public offering, confirming an earlier WSJ report. It's a major turnaround for the company. Airbnb had been talking about going public since last year, but its plans were thrown into disarray when the pandemic shut down global travel. And speaking of the sharing economy, Uber and Lyft say they might suspend their rideshare operations in California as soon as tomorrow. The move would be an escalation in an ongoing legal battle over how their drivers should be classified. Our reporter Preetika Rana has more.
So Uber and Lyft have been locked in an intense battle with their home state of California, which this year passed a law that wants the companies to reclassify their drivers as employees. Now, lawmakers say that if the drivers are reclassified as employees, they get benefits such as paid sick leave, health insurance, and so on. And these are issues that have become very pressing during the pandemic. California in May sued Uber and Lyft, saying, "You guys are not following this law that we essentially crafted for you." And a judge last week agreed with California and gave Uber and Lyft until midnight on Friday to comply with that requirement. Now, Uber and Lyft say that they can't switch their operations overnight. Remember, Uber and Lyft are struggling to turn a profit already. Taking all this on is only going to add weigh their bottom line. And so Uber and Lyft are in this conundrum where they either invest millions of dollars and upend their entire business model overnight, or they shut down in California to avoid being in contempt of court.
Coming up, we're using tools like Slack and Teams more than ever. We'll break down why that is a headache for your HR department after the break.
Robotics, artificial intelligence, augmented reality. The future is here. Listen to Tomorrow, Today, with The Wall Street Journal's Future of Everything, the podcast that takes you to the front lines of science and tech and shows you what's coming next. Look ahead. What do you hear? The Future of Everything, from The Wall Street Journal. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Since the start of the pandemic, we've seen a huge uptick in the use of workplace messaging tools, services like Slack and Microsoft's Teams. Those platforms are a good place to communicate quickly, and they've acted as a stand-in for the office water cooler. But at the same time, we report that some employees have been taking things a bit too far. Our reporter Chip Cutter joins us to explain. Chip, great to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
So we've been talking about these services' sort of accelerated popularity in the pandemic, but can you just remind us of the kind of growth we've seen in the past couple of months?
Absolutely. So if you look at the number of users on these platforms and the time that people are spending on them, all of that has increased since people began working at home in March. And it makes sense. We don't have a way for many of us to communicate with our colleagues face to face. And so these chat platforms really become the de facto way that we get our work done. There are places to answer questions, to kind of talk about projects, but they also end up being places where people can socialize and just inform their colleagues about what's going on with their lives. And so in talking with a number of companies and workplace experts, they say that there can also be some issues that arise because people do feel so comfortable on these platforms that sometimes they can be spaces where people feel bullied or harassed, other issues that have come up.
Yeah, talk a bit more about that. So what kind of issues have we been starting to see?
So because these platforms really have become so essential to so many workplaces and are such a big part of our daily work lives, some people, though, have also said that they feel like these can be places for bullying or passive-aggressive behavior. A recent high-profile example came at the New York Times, where the opinion writer and editor Bari Weiss reported that she felt harassed in company-wide Slack channels at the Times, and that people actually would post axe emojis next to her name. In December, for example, at the luggage startup Away, initially, the company's co-CEO at the time said she would step down after reporting in The Verge showed kind of grievances and kind of her criticizing employees in company Slack channels. She later kind of reversed that decision. But there have also been a number of cases lawyers have reported recently with employees coming to them and saying that they felt kind of bullied or harassed in company Slack channels. One of my colleagues talked to an employment attorney in California who had a case at a technology company there where someone shared an image in a company Slack channel. One worker said that she didn't feel that that image was appropriate for Slack. And as a result, she received a lot of messages calling her uptight, saying that her reaction wasn't appropriate. And so you can just see how this can escalate quickly and kind of cause some problems if people feel like the messages aren't civil and do become more toxic.
Right. And, you know, over messages, there's this opportunity to really misread something or talk past each other. I think looking back over these past few months between the pandemic and Black Lives Matter protests, the moment has really required thoughtful and nuanced conversations, which can be kind of challenging over Slack.
Well, that's right. And I think it's also important to mention that applications like Slack can be really crucial for organizing employees and getting people to come together and talk about issues that they care about. We've seen a number of companies respond to employees voicing their concerns, going straight to the CEO and saying, we want change here. We want greater racial equity. We want to see, you know, differences in how our company operates. And a lot of that has originated on Slack. And so I think companies are trying to walk a fine line here. They want to be able to give employees a voice. They want to give them outlets where they can share their concerns and voice dissent. But they also worry at times that these platforms can become toxic. So I think a lot of companies don't want to get too involved here and shut down that discussion, but they also want to be careful. And I think the Black Lives Matter movement is a great example of that, as a place where in corporate America, a number of colleagues have kind of rallied their peers together using these platforms that are such a big part of our lives. And they've been able to do that through features like private groups and shared channels and all of that around a specific topic that lets people get involved.
Chip, I think if we look into our crystal ball here, we're looking at a future with a lot more remote work in it, which would lend itself to a future with a lot of Slack and Microsoft Teams and other platforms in it, too. How can we expect this to kind of develop in the future?
The experts that I've spoken with have said that these tools are only going to become an even bigger part of our lives. We are all so comfortable with them already. This is here to stay. And I think companies have to figure out how do we create platforms where we feel comfortable and where our culture kind of extends to our digital platforms. And so some companies, for example, have issued guidelines. I talked to the CEO of Evite, which is the online invitation company. It's based near Los Angeles. And right when employees went home in early March, the company sent an extensive list of guidelines and best practices for employees of how they should communicate digitally when they were working remotely. And the CEO told me that that's been a huge help to the company, that they feel like that has led to kind of people just getting on the phone or getting on a video chat when problems emerge instead of kind of bickering in Slack. And so I think in talking with other CEOs, many feel that they just want to make sure they set the proper culture on these channels, certainly feeling like they're going to be a big part of our future going forward.
All right, our reporter Chip Cutter, thanks so much for joining us.
Really good to chat. Thanks again.
That's it for today's tech news briefing. As always, we've got more tech stories on our website, wsj.com, so check us out there. And if you like our show, please do rate and review us. It really does help. I'm Amanda Llewellyn for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.